What's up, everybody? It has been quite some time. I want to say a couple months now since I recorded a podcast. So, welcome back, man. I'm gonna try and get back to it. This is my muse. Something to do while I'm driving, and hopefully I can connect with one of y'all. So, welcome back to the Stuck in Traffic podcast. Roof. Woo! We're back. We are back. I hope you guys have been good, man. We're up to 460 listens total. That's amazing. That's 460 people I didn't know before listened to at least 30 seconds of my bullshit. But we're back. You know, things have drastically changed since... I don't even really know the last... I'd have to look. But we are in the middle of a global revolution, a global pandemic, and things could not be any more hairline sketchy, scary, you know, like what, you know, what is next? Shit is real out here, man. But it's not... It's different, man. The last time I seen life like this would be the Arab Spring. You know, I'm half black, I'm half white. I have dark skin, you know, like... I look more Arabic than I do black, but essentially most people think I'm Dominican. Whatever, I don't really give a fuck. I'm an American, but... You know, I do embrace being black, and I have to embrace also being white. You know, it's different for me. It's different for me from a full 100% black person and 100% white person. And then at the same time, it's really not, right? You know, what's happening right now for America is people, the country is paying for its sins. You know, the tearing, the removal of Confederate statues and symbols and all that stuff. That's awesome. That was only a matter of time. And you notice that happens whenever there's a push for the black movement. And even that word black, I hate saying it. I want to say the Africanist movement, because we are Africanists. You know, that is our determination in the spectrum of being a human being, is we descend from Africa. And I would like to see that term change to just being African. You know, like, I'm African American. I'm from Africa, and I decided to be an American. That's the choice that we have. I am Africanist. But for the African man's plight, you see that the Confederacy is being erased. Not being erased, but removed from public form. It doesn't deserve any recognition. And then, obviously, the police reform effort that is going on to, you know, change the way the police handle people. We got a couple subjects to get to today. But at least starting with me, where I stand right now, being a black male and I guess a white male. I don't know, because I don't look white. I never consider myself white. But my mother is British. She's from England. Her whole family lives in England. I don't have any white American ancestors. All of mine are British. So for me, being white, I guess, doesn't really... Like, I have a different point of view, because my family, they're not from the Confederacy. They don't have Confederate backgrounds. They have Imperial backgrounds, which ain't, you know, it ain't better, but at the same time, it ain't that shit right there. You feel me? So, and then my black background, which is what really kind of hurts me, is that I really don't know much about my dad's parents. You know, I really don't. Yeah, I don't really know too much about them. So it's, you know, he's never told me anything about his parents. I don't know why, you know, I really don't know. I did just do the African ancestry test, and I had my father do it. Not me, because I'm half white. It would throw off. It would be pointless for me to do it because I'm half white. It would show European roots. But for my father, he is 100% black. So I want to see where that results in and where we can find our African roots and, you know, what tribe we belong to and where we come from and the journey that they took. And we can go backwards and we can actually reconnect with our homeland. You know, being black and white, you know, I understand my British family side of things. And not too far back, because some of them are racist assholes, you know. So for me, you know, it's a delicate balance within my own existence of understanding who I am, you know. But I firmly stand on the side of black folks, period, and white folks that are about the cause. You know, things are real fucked up right now, and not because of the Black Lives Matter movement. It's just the government and the president are inept, you know. And I'm, you know, I can have that opinion. You know, I can't speak ill of the president because I have sworn an oath to defend the Constitution. So, you know, I am a service member. You know, if you haven't figured out what branch I'm in by now, then I'm obviously not going to say it. I'll just let y'all figure out the context clues. But, you know, I am a service member, and my oath is to the government and its people and the office. I didn't swear an oath to a person. I didn't swear oath to Donald Trump. He's not my fucking, you know, he's sitting in an office to which he has powers that are limited. You know, and I only obey lawful orders. So that is where I stand on the president. And if you can't extract my opinion of him from that, then, you know, you'll have to wait until I retire to get how I really feel. But, you know, what is happening in this country, what is going on is... it's not concerning in the sense of my safety. I'm concerned for what is next, right? You know, how I look at being black in America, there isn't a single place in this country I cannot go, right? I may not be welcome. I may not get service. I may not get my food cooked. They might spit in my shit. You know, they might call the police on me because they never seen a black person before. You know, but... and it don't help I got a beard being in the service and I look like a Muslim. You know what I'm saying? Like, that scares the shit out of old white folks. You know, but there isn't a place I can't go that someone can be like, oh, you're not allowed to be here because you're black. Because you're not white. They can't. There's nothing. There's nowhere I can't go. I may not be welcome, but it's not that I can't go there. So I am a free individual, right? What has happened is that the people who are in power have changed the law and adapted the law to continue on the persecution of black and brown and poor people in general. You know, and that means the 13th Amendment allows the enforcement of slavery to continue by those who want to see, for some reason, some weird, perverted reason, to see black people in chains. And it doesn't, to me, makes no fucking sense. Like, I don't know how someone thinks like that. Like, how does someone think or see black people are less than, or some sort of creature that crawled out of the swamp when we gave birth to civilization? And that's what it really is right there. It is a fear of no longer being seen as dominant, right? Like, white people in general have an advantage in life from birth because they are white. Now, the choices that they make, right, the choices that they make put them in a position of, all right, well, you've committed a crime. You have a felony. You've done this. You've done that.
And that is where white people end up in our spectrum of, okay, well, I'm a poor white dude with a criminal record. You know, I can't get a good job. I'm living in the trailer park. I'm living in the ghetto. You know, because the ghetto is not existentially black. Like, I don't know if y'all been to the Midwest, but it's some fucked up shit out there. You know, so there's so many dynamics to this thing, man, like, to go over. You know, like how do you even break the shit down, right? We understand that white supremacy has been ingrained because of the Southern Dixiecrat movement. It has been ingrained in the law, right? So how do you remove that? Well, you remove that by rewriting the laws. You remove that by amending the 13th Amendment, by enforcing and empowering the 2nd and 1st Amendment, right? You have to update the United States title codes to reflect 2020 and not 1920 and 1820, right? It has to match. You understand? It has to match. These things have to make sense. Hold on a second. We're going to take a pause real quick. All right. Technical difficulty. We're back. Something went wrong with the music there. Gotta have my J. Cole in the background. You have to update the laws. Let's get back to where we were. We have to update the laws. They need to make sense. The loopholes, like, there's too many loopholes. There's too much gray area. There's too much allowed argument for someone to get a lesser crime. Like, I don't understand, like, the sentencing guidelines. What is a guideline for sentencing? Like, if a person is convicted of first degree murder, there should be a mandatory sentence. There should be no, oh, well, look, he was a cop. He was a cop. We gotta weigh the scale here, right? We have to tip the scales of justice, and he's got 15 years of service, and then he murders someone with intent. So we're supposed to look the other way and give him 10 years rather than 25? No, he should get 25 years. You committed murder with intent, right? Like, there doesn't need to be, like, some sort of ability to get away and get lesser time and we'll plead down and all this. There's too much handshaking. And with handshaking comes agreements, and agreements come friendships. And it's too many people in bed together. You know, so you have to look at what are the governing laws of the United States and how do they apply today? Right? How do they apply today? What impact do they have on the population? What law is more stringent than others? Right? Nonviolent crimes make up a lot of the population in prison because they are drug addicts, because they're drug users. You know, there are people in prison who deserve to be there because they've committed serious violent crimes, and that's fine. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with putting people in prison. That's the whole point. But if you have a pipeline and a system set up to specifically create the situation and environment, you've set up the equation to be solved in violent crimes, to be solved in drug convictions, to be solved in criminal convictions against a specific people, because that side of town, there's no economy, and they have to travel to the other side of town. And when you put on your job application, you live on 41st and whatever, and they're like, oh, that's the hood. We ain't hiring this motherfucker. Right? You live in the hood. We ain't hiring you. I have to put black on my application? What does that have to do with anything? Oh, it's to ensure EEO, blah, blah, blah. What? Why? You look at my name and assume that I'm black. Right? And that's the balance. So there's the inherent racism there, right? In HR, if some lady named Taekwonda applies, she's not getting hired over Stacy or Sharon or an Ashley right? She's not, because of her name and the inherent assumption and background and implemented racism in hiring methods because of someone's name, right? If you have some wild Indian, I don't even know an Indian name, right? You look at an Indian name and you assume that they're a good person because you think that Indians are smart people, right? And you hire that person, or you don't, because you're scared of what Indian people look like. And you assume that every brown-skinned person from Asia is a terrorist, right? There's a subconscious racism within business practices as well. You know, you look at bank loans and where small business loans go. They don't go to black people. They don't go to Hispanic people. They don't go to, you know, to... Oh, shit. Sorry. They don't go to Asian people. You know, they don't go that way. Because there's an inherent... They feel like there's an inherent risk on default when, in turn, these companies are actually successful. You know, the system, that's the systematic racism people are talking about, right? And again, your white friends are not going to understand. They're not going to understand for the most part. So when you go on Facebook and you see some ignorant ass shit like, oh, well, you know, you never picked cotton. No, I did not. I didn't. I did not pick cotton. I never picked cotton. I was never a slave. But I'm paying for those problems now. Because the people who owned those slaves were outlawed and they had to turn their business model to something else. It was called policing and indentured servitude. They were called prisoners, right? You had southern white males go through the South and the Midwest and the North hunting down ex-slaves. And the moment they committed a bullshit-ass crime like preaching without a permit, they were sent to southern white plantations as prisoners. What do you think Angola is? That is the systematic racism we are talking about. That is what we are trying to get rid of. That's what we are fighting. That is the problem. Okay? It's not... I don't care about no Confederate flag, dog. As long as my taxpayer dollars are not keeping Confederate statues alive... I don't give a fuck where you fly. You can fly it in your front. You can paint your house in your garage door a big Confederate sign. I don't give a fuck, bro. That does nothing to me. I don't care. You can boil and stew in your own hate and racism and die of a heart attack early. I don't fucking care, man. As long as my taxpayer dollars do not go towards those statues and preserving that fucking heritage, then I don't really give a fuck if you have it on your shirt or the tattoo on your forearm and you feel fucking tough. And you ain't got the hands to back that shit up. And you want to call the police when you get your ass whooped by some youngins. You know, that's where I'm at with it. So, you know, for me, I'm more worried about systematic racism that is inherently unseen, right? You don't think that it's a big deal. But when you're told in an HR class, yeah, we're not going to hire a Tyree. That's my name. It sounds too black. It's too black. Tyrone. He sounds like a good black. That's a good black name. Tyree is a little fucking... I don't know about that. Tyrell, I don't know about that. Tawanda, to, you know, these crazy black names. Well, I still don't know where they come from, you know. But if I say my name is John, oh, well, that feels disarming because it's a white name. You know? There was a time where I was putting white on my applications and getting pings back. I was getting pings back and I was putting white on my application. And then when I went to the interview, I walked in and I literally got a message saying, you lied on your application. And when I said, I'm actually black and white and identify as white, they never called me back. And I filed an EEO complaint and nothing came of it. You know, so, I mean, shit is, that's what this fight is about. You know, it is more than, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is fantastic and I'm all for it because we do matter. You know, we should not be on some uneven playing field.
But we are. That's a fact. You know, objective truths have no emotional ties to them. You know, if you feel like you know the truth, make sure it's objective. And if you don't know what an objective truth is a truth or a fact that has been community proven, right? Has been scientifically or so, whatever the method is of proving it, people from every background and anywhere in the world can conduct the same study and get the same result. And that in turn is a fact. Right? That is an objective truth. That it cannot be objectified. It is a truth. So objective truth is there is systematic racism because we are founded upon the principles of white Southern white supremacy. Right? Look at how successful it has been. Look around. There are monuments that preserve the heritage of hate and genocide and rape and murder and tyranny and treason. Like those things are projected. Like those are protected monuments. They're protected. They are protected. There are schools named after traitorous generals. Robert E. Lee. Like there are, that's, the Confederacy lasted 5 years. And has not existed for 155 years. They committed treason to own slaves. That is in the first paragraph of the secession from South Carolina, who led the Confederate States. The Confederate flag was not even used until 1948. That's how long the flag went without being in existence. 1948. 1948. Okay, my dad was born in 1951. My mother was born in 1961. Okay, my grandmother and grandfathers, they were alive during the Southern Dixiecrat movement. That is who brought it back. In 1948, the Southern Dixiecrats made that their flag. And in their sentences, the Confederate flag is to stand for the white person. That is a sentence from his statement, Mr. Jefferson, who led the Southern Dixiecrats. That is, like, you can't deny these things because they didn't deny it. And now an uneducated generation of white folks are trying to tell us that the Confederate flag means heritage. Yes, it does. It does mean heritage. A heritage of murder and treason and rape and genocide. That is what it means. There is no, oh, well, it means being a Southerner to me. It does mean being a Southerner. A Southerner who embraces the ideals of his grandparents, of his great-grandparents. That's what it means. There is no, oh, well, I look at it different. Well, you know what? You can't look at a Nazi flag any different now. It only represents being a Nazi. Right? The Rhodesian flag, apartheid. It only means to be embracing the ideas of a white nation in a African country that is whites only, that is owned by whites only, that oppress black Southern African people. The Rhodesians, that is what they stood for. That is what they fought in blood for. The Belgians, they changed their flag because of the atrocities that they committed in Africa. So, I mean, let's not get it fucking twisted. Let's not get it fucking twisted. There is systematic racism, right? And most black people have no clue that they're even dealing with it because they grow up thinking that, hey, well, this is the norm. The norm is the police are everywhere, right? The police are everywhere. Motherfuckers is on public assistance. And this is not every, let me be very clear, this is not every black family's journey, because it wasn't mine. It wasn't mine until I got older, right? But there are black families that live in poverty. They live in the hood. You hear it in the music. The music is a reflection. It's a muse, right? Like, I connected more with J. Cole because his upbringing was my upbringing, right?
He's black and white. We're almost the same age. I've been listening to him since the warm-up, since the come-up, since the blow-up, Friday Night Lights, Revenge of the Nerds, like, all of that stuff, man. I grew up on J. Cole, and his story was my story. You know, I grew up with a mom who was an alcoholic. You know, I grew up with that. That is what I grew up with. You know, I grew up with a father who's a veteran and had PTSD and was just kind of shut off from the world. You know, so I had to figure it out on my own. And my father never abused me, ever, never. He did everything in his power, but he was such a provider that he kind of lost sight of being a dad. He was more, I need to be a provider and a father, you know, and I didn't, you know, I grew up how J. Cole grew, so I connected with him more than anything, you know. I didn't really connect with, you know, other rappers because I didn't grow up in that. It wasn't until I got older and I found myself in the streets because I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a guiding line on where I need to go in life. You know, here's what you should do. This is what I did. This is how I avoided things. I learned that from people in the streets who were like, yo, you're way too smart to be out here, little homie. Like, you can't be out here, dog. You know what I'm saying? You can't be out here, homie. Like, you can't be out here. We can't lose you to the streets, bro. And trust me, I've almost been murdered several times by people that look just like me. Because I thought the streets were where I needed to be. Right, I thought being in the streets and doing things I shouldn't be fucking doing was where I needed to be. It's because gang culture was exploding when I was in high school, and I thought, man, that's pretty dope. These dudes are—they look like me. They, you know, we wear the same shit. We listen to, like, I start fucking with them. I get away from the football team. I end up in the streets. Now I'm in trouble. Now I'm in trouble. I move away from that shit. Now I carry the stigma because that's how I look. You know, so you get harassed by the police, and then people that look like you want to kill you because you look like them. And Nipsey Hussle said this shit the best. You don't really fuck with no square when you on a mission. A nigga that got his shit together, that pants is up straight, he's a square. He's an obvious square. You don't even bother with them. You looking for niggas that look like you. So when you go on a mission and kill a nigga that look like you, you just killed yourself. You committing suicide. We out here committing self-suicide, killing people because they look like us, but they on the other side of the fence. You know, that is where black culture is. Is that we have a very thick line between niggas, black people, like, that's it. There's a very thick line between niggas and black people to us, right? And we have to, we as a culture, and I say we because I partake in being black, right? White people don't accept me off the cuff without me having to say, oh, I'm half white, so accept me. If you can't fucking take me for what I am and what I look like, then I can't fuck with you. But for me, I have to identify with being black as well, because I identify with being British. I'm a soccer fan. I love the Queen. You know what I'm saying? I love British, you know, military stuff, the SAS. I love all that shit. I fuck with them. Their food, I love it. I love going over there. I love my British family. It's my black family that I have a problem with because we are splintered as a family. You know what I'm saying? And I'm putting my deets out there because it might relate to your family. It might relate to how you're going through things. Like, my black family is splintered. You know, we don't talk to each other. We're not close. You know, I don't see my cousins. I don't talk to my cousins, my uncles, my aunts. I don't know what the hell's going on in their lives. You know, I don't know what's going on. And it's been that way since we had a major death in the family. You know, it was my birthday weekend in like 1998. And my cousin Junior, I gave my cousin Junior's birthday was May 5th. Mine is the 8th. And Junior was my twin, right? And I miss him dearly to this day. I really wish we could have grew up together, because we would have been... I know he would have joined the service with me. I know he would have followed me to the end of the earth. Because I think I was like maybe a year or two older than him. And that was my fucking guy. Every weekend, you know, his uncle and his mom, Jackie, was my cousin. Right? Jackie was my cousin. And her husband, Troy, my uncle Troy, and he will always be my uncle. To me, he's blood. He's all I've ever known. I don't know him as the husband or whatever. You know, he's my uncle, you know. So my uncle Troy, and then they had a daughter, Jada. She was a baby. She had to have been like maybe 6 years old. Troy Jr. was like 8, and I'm 1998. I don't even know how old I am in 1998. I'm like 10 or 11, something like that. I don't even remember. But I had this red mongoose that I gave to my cousin that weekend. And they died a few days later. They were going down U.S. Highway 301. And a drunk white boy in his truck, drunk off his ass, came across the lane and hit Jackie Jr. and Jada head on. They had just left our house. And you have to understand how close Jackie and Jr. they were. Like, my mom loved Jackie like a daughter. And to this day, she cries when we talk about it. They were at our house non-stop. We were that close of a family at the time. My cousins, Brandon and Jamie, we were always together. They would come down from Jacksonville. My cousin Jackie and them, they would come up from Riverview. And this, we lived in Brandon. And we were always together, all of us, always, always, always. And when they died, that fractured my family. Because they had to take Jackie and Junior off life support, because they were internally dead. The only thing keeping them alive was the machine. And my Uncle Troy had to make that decision. And no one in the family wanted him to do it. And they went days and days and days, and the doctors were like, look, they are not, they, like, there's, like, if the power goes out, they die. Like, that is where they are. The only thing keeping them alive is this machine. There's zero brain activity. The heart is not working without electric stimulation. Like, that is where they were at. And they were like that for days. And my Uncle Bobby, and because that's his daughter, or niece, I want to say it's his daughter. Yeah, it was his daughter. Like, he fought my Uncle Troy to not take them off life support. And, you know, they tried everything. And the doctors, you know, this is at Tampa General Hospital. This is one of the best hospitals in the Southeast. You know, they flew in specialists. You know, he was in a lot of debt after this, you know, because he did everything he could to get them to come back to life. And it didn't work. And he pulled them off life support, and they both passed away a day later. And it's the first time I saw a dead body. And this I'll never forget seeing my cousin Junior, my brother Junior, in the casket, and my whole family. There was so much pain in that building. It changed me and numbed me to death forever, man. Like, I'm not a normal person because of that. And seeing my mom cry and my dad and everyone just so hysterically crying, and then, you know, grief turns into anger if you don't process it correctly. And that's one thing in black families we don't do. We don't process grief and pain and anger. We don't talk enough, you know. Like, it's a running joke, and you see that in comedic things where, you know, like, shut your crying ass up, you know. Like, it's a comedic thing to not talk about it, but it fucks you up, man. I mean, look at what happens to soldiers when they don't talk about it. I mean, look at me. I am a fucking train wreck if I don't talk. If I'm not able to express how I'm feeling and let people know I'm triggered, and, you know, my mental triggers and anger, and I'm seeing red. Like, if I'm not able to do that, it's a bad fucking day. You know, and that anger turned into animosity, and it broke my family apart. And we have not been the same family since since pretty much 1998, 2000. Like, we have we have not been the same family. You know, people just went their separate ways. It fractured our whole family. And, you know, when we had, we would have family reunions and it was fights and arguments over that shit. And, you know, about, you're not doing enough. It just, you know, it really poisoned the water for us. And it's super unfortunate because my family has been in Tampa since the 1800s. You know, and I really don't know much about them, what they've done, it, you know, because we are so fractured and we don't talk. You know, and I have a younger generation of cousins that I don't even know. That I really don't even know because our parents don't talk. Our parents are separate. Our parents have splintered. And they feel like they're not welcome. You know, and they are welcome. You know, they may have chose to still live in the hood in West Tampa. And that's cool, man. Like, that's got nothing to do with me. You know, but there's just a, there's a cultural line and, you know, division in my family, and not talking about that pain, that can be reflected in a lot of black families. You know, you imagine, you know, you see these movies like, there's one movie about a kid growing up in Oakland, and I love Oakland. I was out there for a long time. It's my, one of my favorite places to be, especially being a young black male. Like, being in Oakland feels so, like, I feel connected, man. Like, I feel tapped in because of the history of Oakland. And, you know, you see the pain from a father trying to make it. You got mouths to feed. You know, that shit translates to, you know, pain in the black community because we can't, we don't have a fair shot. You know, we don't have a fair shot. You know, you're already assumed to be stupid. Right, you're already assumed to be dumb, you know, and you're not welcome in the workplace because you're assumed to be some sort of super predator. You're some sort of criminal, you know, and that is the, that is what this whole fight is about, you know, and the, and it's more than just police brutality. That is something that is going to get fixed, right? We are going to hold law enforcement accountable, and I will get to that. But what this is right now is, it's more than just Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter need to matter to black lives as well. Like, we need to give a fuck about each other. We need to put the guard down. And when you see a black man you never met, it doesn't need to be some, like, two lions meeting each other, like, figuring it out. Because I'm not a threat to you. Like, I'm not gonna fucking hurt you, you know? I really, like, I'm not going, like, I have no intentions on doing bodily harm to another black male just because I don't know him. You know, I don't have that. That is not my. I would never do that shit, man. That's why the streets didn't work out for me. It's why gang culture didn't work out for me. That's why I didn't become a Crip. That's why I didn't become a GD. You know, I have been asked. You know, I've been spoke. You know, literally right now, I can make a phone call and be like, yo, it's been a while, I want to get on. And I'm automatically on. I'm automatically on. You know, I'm all, it, that, like, that is how connected I am, and I just chose not to take that path. It just wasn't for me. You know, that path is just not for me. It's just not. And I don't condemn anyone who chose the streets or chose becoming Crip or Blood or Latin King or GD or, you know, Folk Nate, whatever. If that was your calling and that put food on the table and you felt like that's your community, I can't fault you for that because you picked the path that was presented and you chose the one that was closest to your heart because that's all you had. But I know some Crips and I know some GDs that are fucking engineers, that are officers, that are police officers, right? And they come from Crip neighborhoods. They were Crips. They were GDs. They were Folk Nation. And they decided, like, yo, I really can't fill another slot in the prison. I cannot become another statistic. And they changed themselves. And they're fucking area managers. And you wouldn't even know. You would have no fucking clue that this dude was putting work in on the street back in early 2000s. You would have no fucking clue because he reformed himself. So if gangs can reform, the police can as well. And the black community can too. Like, we really need to embrace love. And what a lot of gang members will tell you, there was no love in the house. You know, my mama beat my ass, my daddy beat my ass. There was no love. You know, I hit the streets because daddy was a crack addict. Mama was this. Daddy was, you know, there was no love in this house. You know, you hear that shit. You hear that shit in the music. You know what I'm saying? Like, we need to reform as well. We don't need to reform to please white people. We don't need, that's not what the reform is for. And I think that message is getting lost. Because only white people are talking. Why? What about black on black crime? Well, white people represent 61% of all violent crime arrests. Okay? 61% of all violent crime arrests are white people. They lead in rape and incest and suicide murders. Okay? That's what they lead in. They lead in killing the police. That's what it is. White people kill the police more than black people by a large margin. Okay? Terrorist acts, white males. School shootings, white males. Threats against government facilities, white males. That is the existential crisis, is that the white male ego has been shattered and they're turning to violence. But for us as black folks, we're not doing the reform for someone else. You know, we're not reforming for other people. We're reforming for us. That's who we're reforming for. Us, not them. That's who we're reforming for. Us, not them. We have to do it for us. Because if we can change how our community treats itself, we can change a lot of things, man. Look at how other communities handle each other. The Asian community is all internal, right? The Jewish community is all internal. The Arabic community is all internal. The Indian community is all internal, man. It's all internal, right? For us, we're so shattered and so separated because we, honestly, us as a population, we are lost, right? We are lost. We are lost upon a foreign land, and we've done what we had to do to make the best out of nothing. And that has to count for something. You know, we have to realize and recognize that what our ancestors have gone through to get us to the 55 years of freedom. That's all we got. It's 55 years of freedom. And I'm rounding that number off. That's it. 55 years. My father is 68. Okay? 55 years of freedom, of non-legal segregation and suppression that specifically target you for being black. That's it, man. You name another entity that in 55 years has fixed everything, that has gone through and created and established an entire community, right, of 64 million people. You show me that, because it don't exist, okay? Those people don't exist. We are those people, okay? We are the Israelites. We are the Jews wandering through the desert. That is who we are as black folks right now. And there isn't going to be some singular, hey, this person is our leader. That's not how this is going to happen. There needs to be a coalition. Right, there needs to be a coalition of black folks around this country joining the same cause. And the biggest problem, one thing you'll hear from your white friends is, well, white people don't need to do that. Well, that's fine. No one's saying you have to. But we need to. Because we as black folk have only 55 years, man. That's it. 55 years. And look at what has happened in the last 55 years. We represent 24% of the imprisoned population. Right? We represent 48% of police shootings. right? Like, our statistical numbers are highly represented because us as a community, we are shattered, right? We don't have our shit together. Black folks, in general, most of them have their shit together, right? At least my generation, you know, service members, businessmen, entrepreneurs, inventors, you know, web designers. You know, we are entering into a lot of spaces that have been white for a long time because we didn't have the resources. So don't worry about being afraid to do something because you are the only black person doing it. That is the whole point of being black. Being from Africa, we are never afraid to walk into the sunset to see what was out there. How do you think we found the rest of the world? How do you think the Mansa Musa of Mali. Yeah, Mansa Musa of Mali is the richest man in history. In history. Okay? He is the singular most richest person in history. His wealth is to be estimated in the trillions of dollars. Where do you think navigation and algebra come from? Right? Where do you think language comes from? Right? Written language, where does that come from? Us. We invented that. We invented navigation, boats, sailing. Right? That's why when you go to South America, the Aztecs, they built the same things that were built in Egypt. The same pyramid. Right? There's statues of black people, of African tribal people in Mexico that predate Mexicans in Belize, all over Central America. It was us, we invented that. So you have to break into spaces that you don't feel comfortable in, right? You have to. That is the whole purpose of this thing, is to set the tone for people to come after you, right? That is our legacy, is that we are path builders. We are wayfinders. And you have to embrace that shit. That is how we change our narrative. And we've been doing it for a long time. Look at where we have come from to where we are now. So do not let some white person on the internet deflate how you feel because they are insecure. And they don't even know where the fuck they come from. They couldn't tell you where the fuck they're from. You ask them about where they come from. Where you from, white person? I'm Irish or something. Or something. Hold on, let me get to this gate. I'm pulling on the base right now. Take a breather.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you know, embrace that shit. Let's get back to it. Embrace that shit, right? Love who you love. My wife is Hispanic. She's from El Salvador, you know. Her people are seen as bottom feeders, as drug mules, as gang members in her own community, right? People always ask her, are you Puerto Rican? No, I'm from El Salvador. Oh, that's what you get. So it ain't just black folks. Don't get it twisted. It ain't just us. It ain't just us, man. All right? It ain't just us. Being Afro-Latino, being from El Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala, you're looked at like, oh. Oh, that's what you get. Oh. That's what you get. Oh. So embrace that shit, man. Embrace that. This is going to be a part one because I got a lot to cover. So I'm going to end it here. I'm going to let y'all, 50 minutes, man. You know, I'm going to let y'all digest. If you fuck with me, man, just throw a follow wherever. I honestly need to, like, there's so many platforms that Anchor connects to. If you listen on Anchor, I appreciate it. This is no longer monetized. If you hear an ad, please, if there's a way that it shows to contact me on there, please let me know. And I'll fix it. I don't want this to be monetized. I'm not here for money. I'm just here to get things off my chest, and maybe I can change how you feel about yourself and how you view the world. Again, this is the Stuck in Traffic podcast, man. You can follow me on Twitch, Facebook. Well, not Facebook, because I don't have a podcast-related profile, but on Instagram is Crown4QH, Twitch, Crown4QH, Twitter, Crown4QH. You know, just hit me up. If you want to join the podcast and you feel like you need to, if you want to have an educated conversation of your point of view, just tweet me, man, and we'll set up a time and we'll go over a few things. You know, again, white, black, brown, whatever, whatever color, because I hate colors. It allows people to be targeted, but, you know, whatever your race is, your ethnicity, your background, I fuck with you. White, black, I don't care. You know, but find who you are and then make a decision. You know, don't embrace just being black or just being white. Find out who the fuck you are. Where do you come from? If you come from Ireland or the Dutchland or Netherlands or wherever, embrace that part of your history. Because if you're saying, oh, I'm white and I'm from Louisiana, you're probably looking at things the wrong fucking way. Right? If you're just saying, yo, I'm black, I'm from South Central, or I'm from, you know, New Orleans or wherever, like, great. But you came from somewhere before. Hold that shield up. Find out what tribe you're from. Where are you from? What journey did they take? So you can measure yourself against men who are greater than you when they took them steps forward. Right? That's what y'all need to do. I'm doing it. I ain't scared, man. When I find out where I'm from, dope, bro. I'm gonna reach out. I'm gonna embrace that shit. I'm gonna wear it like a badge of fucking honor, man. Because that's what it is. Then you can measure yourself because you know where you come from. All right, I'm not going to drag this on. It's an hour. So I appreciate y'all for sticking around, man. Hit me up on social media. Follow me. Or don't. Turn this shit off and never listen again. It's cool, man. If I pissed you off as a white person and you're fucking mad about this, you can tweet me, man. You can DM me and we can go over why you're mad. And maybe I can help you find out who the fuck you are. So you don't have shit to be mad about. Maybe you can point that anger in the direction of people who have oppressed your ancestors. And we can fix that. So I fuck with y'all. Y'all have a good day. I love y'all, man. Y'all stay safe. This is part one. I will do part two at some point this week. I may do it today and post it later. So we'll see. All right. Y'all have a good day.